We're holding in Yoma, page 54, Oysamach. So now we finally get to the end of the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur and the Mishnah of the Scribes, Pisgah, the Yom Tov Hayah Oysa La'oyavav, the Kohen Gadol would make a Yom Tov, would make a simcha for his friends, B'chola, when the fact that he came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim safely. There's actually a sicha where it ever talks about that this itself is part of the Avodah as well, that now he's bringing down everything that he accomplished on Yom Kippur into the world at large. Anyway, so the Braisa goes on to mention that everybody would be accompanying him while he's walking home. There would be a huge crowd accompanying him. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Maisa b'kohen echad, b'kohen gadol echad, shiyotzim b'beis HaMikdash. There was a kohen gadol who was leaving the beis HaMikdash at the end of Yom Kippur. Havu ka'az l'kula alma basrei, and everybody is following him out of honor to him. Kad chazir l'shmai v'avtalyan, but then they saw shmai and avtalyan, the Havu ka'osu, that they were coming, and they themselves were coming to pay their respects to the kohen gadol, but everybody saw them, shavku l'didei v'ozlo l'basa shmai v'avtalyan. They abandoned the Kohen Gadol and started following Shmaya of Avtalion because they realized that this Kohen Gadol, Marsha points out, was not such a Tamid Chacham. And we know that even Mamzer Tamid Chacham, Kodim the Kohen Gadol Amoretz. So even though Shmaya and Avtalion, there's different opinions among the Rishonim whether they themselves were Geirim. Everybody agrees they were descended. Everybody agrees that their ancestors were Goyim. It's Machlokas whether they themselves were Geirim or whether their ancestors were, which is b'chlal an interesting question if they themselves were Geirim, because you find the halacha is that it's not so simple to appoint somebody, to appoint a Geir to a position of Srara, to a position of leadership over the Jewish people, unless Imoim Yisrael. So there's a number of explanations, one of them being that there was nobody else as qualified at that time to lead the Jewish people. Anyway, the point is that everybody realized that yes, a Talmid Chacham outranks a Kohen Gadol, and therefore they abandoned walking and was to pay their respects to the Kohen Gadol, and they went to pay their respects to Shmaya and Avtalion. Eventually, Shmaya and Avtalion themselves came to take leave of the Kohen Gadol because that was what they had come here for. They weren't coming to upstage him; they were coming to also. So he says to them, Yaisun bnei amomin l'shlom. May the descendants of the nations come in peace. Now, at least on the surface of it, he's saying it in a very insulting way, because it actually explains it's a loshon gnai, because they're descended from Goyim, they're descended from Sancheiriv. So therefore, he's saying the kind of greeting that you would say to Goyim. Now, the Ritva points out that maybe not. The fact is, the Jewish people, born Jews, are called amomim as well. Nevertheless, though, he still should have chosen a more bekavadik loshon. So they answered him, you know what? What you said was actually very appropriate. Yesum bnei amomin l'shlom, may the descendants of the nations go and come in peace. Da avdi uvda da Aaron, because they act according to the way that Aaron did. Oyev shalom v'roidev shalom. On the other hand, the descendants of Aaron, meaning you, are not necessarily going to come in peace. Because they're not acting the way Aaron did. Because here you're doing anas dvarim. You're throwing up our past against us, which we know is an issue. You're not allowed to do that. So that's what Maharsha says. Listen, I mean, if the Ritva is saying that he used an expression that could mean Jews as well, then at least according to the Ritva, he should have chosen his words more carefully. But Maharsha says, come on. I mean, then they wouldn't have answered him in such a sharp way. The implication is that they understood him to actually be trying to insult them, and so they turned the insult back on him.
So after a whole day of Yom Kippur.
So after a whole day of Yom Kippur, yeah. I mean, so,
being
yeah.
So spiritual, mm-hmm.
Evidently, a person, you know what, I mean, you know, this is akin of our type of our covet, mitzinus adam and olam. Here it was an example of, you know, he felt there was a lack of covet to him, and that it was maver al daita. It goes to show, in other words, that, yeah, how does the expression go? That So, yeah, that's this Kohen Gadol needed to learn that lesson, yeah. The fact is, by the way, also, I mean, the fact is, you see, this Kohen Gadol was great enough to survive the whole Avodah of Yom Kippur as well. So he wasn't Sam a Katla Kanye Ba'agma either, but yeah. That was a Yom Tov, yeah. Okay. The end of the Perek starts talking about, now that we went through throughout the Masechta, the Kohen Gadol is changing outfits back and forth between Big Day Zahav and Big Day Lavan. So now it talks about the Godim of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedlin, because there's really no other place in Shas where there's a suitable place to talk about the dinim of it. So here's where it talks about it here in the seventh Perek of Yomah. So it deals with the halachas of them, how many threads they have to be woven out of, etc. And then the Gemara deals with various details involving the clothes of the Kohenim and also involving the Kalim of the Mishkan, which after all, those Kalim, at least some of them, the Aron and the Mizbeach HaZahav particularly, also played a starring role throughout Yom Kippur, so it's appropriate to talk about them now also. So Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina, my dichtiv atzei shittim oimim. The Pasuk says about the beams of the Mishkan that they were made of atzei shittim that were standing. Now, in most Poshita sense, it means they were standing in the sense of, Rashi says on the Pasuk, that the walls of the Mishkan weren't built like the way you build the walls of a ship, for example, where you have one piece on top of another. Rather, they were vertical, one next to the other. But still, Marsha points out that the fact is, we can see that when we look at the description over there and we look at the dimensions of the Mishkan, it becomes very obvious that they're oimdim. So the Pasuk doesn't really need to specify and say the word oimdim. So what it means is sha'umnim derech gdilasan. It means the beams were standing the way they grew. So the side that was towards the roots when the tree was growing, that's the side that's towards the bottom when they're making it into a beam for the Mishkan, and the same thing with the top. We have that as far as other mitzvahs as well. This is why by the Dalad Minim we have to make sure that that all the Dalad Minim are facing upward derech gdilasan. When it comes to the Esrog, by the way, it's a little bit confusing. The Esrog actually grows on the tree upside down because the Uketz end is the one attached to the tree and it hangs downward. But that's considered to be the lower end in the sense that it's closer to the roots of the tree. The Pitim end is, even though, you know, physically on the tree, it hangs lower down, but it's considered to be higher up because it's further away from the roots.
Sorry, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's holding it upside down. That's it. So. The other way.
Right.
By us, the minigas, we do it first, bracha facing down.
That's Minig Ashkenaz, yes, as they hold it. Yeah, because the idea is, because you have to do the bracha over Lasi Yosin. Yeah, you have to do the bracha over Lasi Yosin. So our minig is we just leave the eswig on the table or in the box or whatever until we finish the bracha, until we're almost finished the bracha, and then we pick them up. Minig Ashkenaz is, yeah, they hold the eswig upside down during the bracha, and then they flip it over for... That's the point. No. The point is that holding it upside down is not derech gdilas, and holding it with the uketz up is you're not yotz of the mitzvah. But fakir, this way, they're not holding it. You have to realize with the dalad minim, technically you're yotz of just holding them. You don't actually have to shake them to fulfill the mitzvah. So therefore, so if you were to hold them, even you're not holding them together, even you're not shaking them, and then you were to say the bracha, it's kind of too late. You're saying the bracha after you've already fulfilled the mitzvah. Therefore, there's the inyan. You have to make sure that you're only holding the esrog in the right position when you're actually when you finish saying the bracha. So we accomplish that by only picking it up when we're finishing the bracha. In the velt, they accomplish that by holding it upside down for the bracha and then turning it the right side up, or pit them up once they've finished the bracha in order to then be yotz of the mitzvah and do the nanu. So yeah, the Meshach Chochma, by the way, points out that this is only when you have separate pieces that are put one next to the other, like we have with the beams of the Mishkan and with the Dalad Minim. He says, for example, you don't find the boards of the Aron or the Shulchan or any of the other Kalim of the Beis Hamikdash necessarily had to be Derech Gdilasan, because there you have one big unit made out of those pieces of wood. And he says, by the same token, we don't find by Schach, for example, there's no Indian that the walls of your Sukkah or the Schach of your Sukkah should be Derech Gdilasan, because it's a different Geder of a Mitzvah. Anyway, so that's one meaning of oimdim. Dover acha oimdim, another meaning of oimdim, shema amidin es tzipuyam, they hold on their plating. Now we know the beams of the Mishkan were plated with gold. So Rashi explains, in other words, they nailed them on with nails. So they actually, so there's a mamidin, the wood helps hold the nails in place, which in turn holds the gold plating in place. Elsewhere, Rashi explains slightly differently. The point is, you might think each beam is 10 amos long. So maybe they made one big sheet of gold 10 amos long and put it on the beam. No, they made smaller pieces and they nailed them in place in various places along the beam. Tosfos brings a different explanation that it means in addition. Also, it means that the wood never rotted like this. If the wood were to rot away, then the plating would fall off. The wood never rotted, therefore the plating stayed intact and stayed where it's supposed to be. So that's another meaning of oimim shema midin as sipuyim, that they cause the plating to stay where it's supposed to be. So Rashi himself actually brings that as the second explanation. Yet another explanation of oimdin is shema toma. You might say, look, these beams of the Mishkan are never going to be used again. They were hidden away when the Bais Hamikdash was built. The kalim of the Mishkan are long gone. They were captured by the goyim or whatever it was. You might think all that sibron uvotel sikuyon, their hope is gone and their future is bottled. There's no future for these ever again. Tamad lema oimdim. Therefore, the pasuk says oimdim sha oimdim la'olam la'olamim. They last forever and ever. They're still hidden. We have when Shlomo built the Bais Hamikdash, we learned earlier in the Masechta, he built the matmonius amukus va'akakalus, the winding pathways and labyrinths under the Bais Hamikdash, where eventually the Oren was hidden away there hundreds of years later. But in addition, also the beams of the Mishkan and whatever was left of the Mishkan at that point was also stored away there, and it's still there waiting for Mashiach to come, and then it'll be revealed. And then what they'll do with it then, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a Bais Hamikdash built out of stone. They're not going to need gold-plated wood beams, but either they'll put them on display, maybe they'll whatever they'll do, but the point is they're still there. There's the idea, that says that Maisa Moshe Nitzchi, and that anything that Moshe did is eternal, and since the Mishkan was built under Moshe's supervision, then it has a certain Nitzchi Osteit more than any of the other, but more than the two Bati Mikdash. Continues the Gemara, Amar Abchama Bar Abchamina. My dichtiv es bigdei asrod l'shores v'kodesh. And Marsha, by the way, adds the point. The gold, sure, gold could last for thousands of years, but the wood, you would think, would long since have rotted away, and therefore the Omnim is telling us that not, the wood is still intact as well. So Amar Abchama Rav Chanina, my dichtiv es bigdei asrod l'shores v'kodesh. Among the things Hashem tells Moshe to make or to have made for the Mishkan is the bigdei hasrod. Now, the Gemara here is understanding Bigdei Asrod to mean the Bigdei Kohuna. Now, Rashi on the Pasuk there in Parashas Kisisa and in a couple of other places explains that actually the Bigdei Asrod, Rashi learns, first of all, he explains the word Srod comes from an Aramaic word that means a netting. So he explains that it means like this you have at the end of Parashas Bamidbar, you have the packing cloths that they would pack the Oren and the other Kalim of the Mishkan in when they're carrying them from one stopping point to another. So Rashi learns they were made as kind of a netting. They were made with a loose weave so that you could see the content from underneath them, and therefore they're called Bigdei Asrod because they were made with that net-like work. But here the Gemara is explaining that it means the Bigdei Kohuna. Rashi himself brings that explanation, but he doesn't like it based on the Pesukim. However, Marasha mentions over here that Amban deals at some length with Rashi's objections and says that no, Bigdei Asrod, like we see in this Gemara over here, does in fact mean the Bigdei Kohuna. That Amban derives the word Bigdei Asrod. He do it like this. You have the word, the Gemara is going to darshan it as related to the word Sorid, which means a remnant. So that Ramban explains it does come from the word sorid, but here the Gemara is going to give a drasha what it means, but the simple sense is like a remnant is one thing left out of a whole group. The same way, the Bigdei Asrod primarily refer to the Bigdei, to the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, who is the one unique one among the Jewish people who wears those Begadim. So therefore, they're called Bigdei Asrod. You have nowadays in modern Hebrew, you have the word misrad, meaning an office. That comes from this as well. A misrad is a place where officiating is being done. What does it mean? As bigdei asrod l'shores v'kodesh il mole bigdei kohuna lo nishtayim sin ein shor yisrael sodu depolit. Were it not for the Bigdei Kohuna, there wouldn't have been left of the enemies of the Jewish people, which is the usual euphemism the Gemara uses, there wouldn't have been any remnant or any leftover left. Why? Because it actually says the Korbanos are brought by the Kohenim wearing the Bigdei Kohuna, and the Korbanos are mechaper for the Jewish people. Now the Iyun Yaakov points out the fact is, I mean, you could say the same thing. Now you have elsewhere the Gemara talks about actually Marsha, first of all, mentions that in Erchin and also in Zvachim, actually, it mentions it's not just what Rashi is saying that the Korbanos are brought with them. There is also the consideration the Bigdei Kohuna themselves, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim and in Erchin, are mechaper for various individual averus of the Jewish people, the Mechnasayim for Arayas and the Psonis for Shvichos Damim and so forth. And the Gemara gives a whole full list and Daushins each one from Sukkim. So in that sense also, they have that. They have that. So Ion Yaakov adds the point then that the Bigde Kohuna have both have an advantage in that sense over the Korbanos. Because then you have, when the Bigde Kohuna are being worn and the Korbanos are being brought by the Kohen wearing the Bigde Kohuna, then you have both advantages, and that's why we're calling the Bigde Kohuna specifically Bigde Esron. Okay. More about the Kalim of the Bis Mikdash. Let's focus now on the Oren. Omer Rachva, Omer Rav Yehuda, Sholosh Aronis Otsa Betzalel. Betzalel, when he made the Oren, he actually made three boxes. And so he shall eat the middle. Now you're going to have, there was going to be a wood. Now the pasuk says the oren was going to be made out of atzi shittim, and then mibayis and mechutz tetzapenu. It was plated on the inside and on the outside with gold. And so he shall eat the middle one that was going to go between the two gold layers was made out of wood, out of atzi shittim, tisha, and it was 9 tefachim tall. The pasuk says, "I'm of a chetzi kaimasei." This gemara, by the way, is following the opinion. The gemara mentions elsewhere. You have machloikas from Meir and Rabbi Huda. The amma that was used in the Mishkan and the Bes Mikdash, was it a 5 tefachim or 6? You have the Meir holds that all of them were 6 tefachim, unless otherwise specified. There were certain parts of the mizbeach and the mizbeach hazahav that used 5 tefach amas, but other than that, they used 6 tefach ones. Rabbi Huda holds that the ones used for the kalim were all 5 tefachim. This machlokas comes up in a number of places in Shas. So according to him, the inner box wouldn't have been 9 amma, wouldn't have been 9 tefachim tall. It would have been only 7.5, because that would be an amma and a half, according to him, 5 plus 2.5. But he were following Rav Meir that the saying, and therefore saying that it was nine tall. Rashi points out that the Oren didn't have legs. It wasn't like a chest it wasn't like a dresser or something which has legs between the bottom of it and the ground. It just had a flat bottom and it sat directly on the ground. Pnimi shel zahav, inside that was a gold box, shmona, and it was 8 tefachim tall, because Rashi explains the bottom of the wood box was 1 tefach tall. So therefore, all you have from the bottom, from the inside bottom of that wooden box until the top edge is 8 tefachim. And so inside that they put this gold box. And then chitzin asara umashu. Then the outer one on the outside of the wood was 10 tefachim and a fraction tall. That was it, 9 tefachim cover the height of the wooden box. Another tefach for the mashu Rashi explains is because the bottom, the gold itself wasn't a tefach thick. It was only a tiny bit thick underneath the wood. So far you have 10 and a fraction. And then in addition, you have one more tefach which covers the thickness of the kapodas. Because like this, in other words, without that, when you have the kapodas on top of the oren, you would see a seam, you would see a line between them. So instead you have like the outer golden box, the kapodas fits inside that box, and that way from the outside it looks smooth. So therefore, that's 10 and a fraction. So the Gemara asks about Tanya Achad also Mashu. We learn in a Braisa that it was that the outer one was 11 and a fraction tall. And the answer is Loikasha, Ha Commander Omer, Yesh Ba Obye Tefach, Ha Commander Omer, In Ba Obye Tefach. Because there's a machloikas whether the kapodas was a tefach thick or not. So the second Mando Omer holds the kapodas itself was a tefach thick. Therefore, you need a tefach to account for that as well. Whereas the first opinion holds that not the kaporis, rather, Rashi says that we're referring to the gold underneath. In other words, the first opinion holds again that the gold underneath the wood on the outside, the gold that's going to be touching the ground, is only a mashahu thick. The second opinion holds that it was a full tefach thick. Now, in that case, you need an extra tefach. Now, Rashi says, I don't know where we find that machlokes. So Tosfos Yeshanim actually brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, who has a somewhat different understanding of the discussion over here, according to which there is in fact elsewhere in Shas there is that discussion of whether the plating was indeed a tefach thick or not. Anyway, Maharal Shah brings over here that actually the symbolism behind it. First of all, he brings from the Evan Ezra who asks what's the point of having the wood in the middle anyway? If anyway you're going to be ba'etz mechutz tapenu, what do you need the wood in the middle for in the first place? So Maharal Shah says the symbolism of it is the Arun itself represents a person, and therefore it's made out of wood. Ki adam eitz asada. And then you have the inside and the outside, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, because a Talmid Chacham needs to be Toichei Kabaroi, he can't be a hypocrite. He can't be looking like gold on the outside and be only plain wood on the inside. His inside has to match his outside. With that said, though, and Mefoshim point out, so in that case, Taka, why didn't Hashem say to make it out of pure gold? And because the symbolism is, a person, as long as a person is on the inside and the outside good, let him not worry too much about how it is between the inside and the outside, kind of. He may even be like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in Yedea Be'ez HaDerech Melich, you know, you see, because he's busy with his avoda on behalf of the Tzibur and teaching Torah and everything, and he doesn't have time to think where exactly he's holding and where exactly he's holding in terms of subjugating his Yetzirah. That's not your department. You can be wood over there as long as you've got me bias and mechutz, the gold, then you're in good shape.
What does
Emsoim mean? Emsoim is the middle one. So the vort is, in other words, so you had, there were three nested boxes. You had a middle box made out of wood. Then they put in a smaller box, and we said 8 tefachim tall, inside it. And then they put a larger box, 10 or 11 tefachim tall, on the outside of it.
Around the
emtsoi. So in other words, that way the emtsoi is mibayis umechutz tzapenu, but it's not tzapenu in the sense, for example, now you could understand that tzapenu would mean that a gold plated it, like a gold plate anything else. No, we're saying that it means that there were actually separate boxes that nested one inside the other. Mefoshim also point out that there may have been the inner box may have had like a flange around it to cover, because otherwise you have the top edge of the wooden box will be visible when you pick up the kapotas. So there would have been a flange around the edges of the inner box that covers over the exposed wood.
So
Dimi Shazal means the inner box, yeah, would have this flange, yeah. Right. Okay, so the Gemara says, "My mashahu." So then, in that case, so what's the, when we said 10 and mashahu? So in the last brisa, we said achad also mashahu. So the first brisa, asoro mashahu. Then fine, we're saying that it. We're saying you have 9 tefachim to cover the wooden box of a mashahu underneath it to cover the underside of it, and then you have it sticks out, and then you have it sticks above the kaporis, because the kaporis is a tefach tall. So there's your 10 and mashu. But in the second braise, if you're saying that the bottom of it underneath the wood was a full tefach thick, then what's that mashu? And the answer is, my mashu is there. That mashu would be, as the Torah tells us, so there had to be a little bit of a rim around it, and that rim is the mashu. So it's less than a tefach, so it's not, so we don't count it among the number of the tefachim, but it was there. Tosfos points out, it's not like Rav Yehuda, not like Rachba Amr Rav Yehuda would disagree that there was a zer. The fact is, the pasuk says there was one. He's just not addressing it. He's saying we're addressing only what was needed in order for the wood to be completely covered. We're not addressing the fact that in addition there was a zer. Otherwise, he would have said that it was 10 and 2 mashahus. Okay, so what's the deal about this zer? Amr Rav Yechanan shloisha zerim hay. Marshall also, by the way, points out an interesting point over here. Besides for this comparison that we're saying a person is like a tree, ki adam eitz asada, in fact, you also have the word eitz is the same gematria as kesef. So it represents the point that represents both the Torah is compared to both, the Torah is compared to gold, and the tzaddik is compared to silver. So it represents that a person, he's wood, but he should be on the level of a tzaddik, who is also compared to an eitz, and who is also compared to silver. Anyway, so Amar Rabbi Yochanan Shloisha Zerim Hein. There were actually 3 kelim in the Mishkan that each had a zer. Shal Mizbeach, Shal Shulchan, Shal Aron. Each one of them, the Torah says, V'asis Aloi Zer Zahav Savi. Shal Mizbeach, each of them represents a crown. Now you have in Pirkei Avos, Shloisha Ksarim Hein. Kesa Torah, Kesa Kona, Kesa Malchus, and then Kesa Shem Tev Ola Agabeyim. So these 3 zerim represent the first 3 of those crowns. Shal Mizbeach Zoha Aaron Avloi, the one of the Mizbeach represents, of the Mizbeach HaZohav, that is, that represents the Keser Kohuna. So Aaron had the schus and he got it for his descendants. Shel Shulchan, the one of the Shulchan, which represents wealth, like you have the expression Shulchan, or like you have the expression Shulchan Malachim. So that Zachar David Benatlo, he says David had the schus, and he got it for himself and his descendants. Shel Oren and Dain Humunach, the one for the Oren is available. Kola Roitz a little Yavav Yito. Anybody who wants to take it can come and take it. There's no, there's no. You don't need yichus or something to be a tamid chacham. So you might think, well, then it's the least important. If it's available to anybody, and Aaron and David didn't bother getting it for themselves and their descendants, it must not be that important. Talmud Loma. Therefore, the pasuk says, "Be malachim yimloicha v'gamer." The Torah personified says, "With me, kings rule." So, in other words, when you have somebody who crowns the king, he must be greater than the king himself. So therefore, if we're saying that the Torah gives rulership to kings, that implies the Torah is higher than kings. Marshall adds also then, so it's greater than kingship. It's also greater than kahuna, because we have the pasuk yikarehi mipninim, that the Torah is more precious than pearls. So the first of all, he says that the pninim can mean in the simple sense that tzitz was decorated with pearls, which is an interesting chiddush that the Marshall is saying over here. I don't think we find that anywhere else. Usually we say that tzitz was a gold plate, and it had a kodesh lashem, and it had psilt chelas to hold it in place. But here Marshall is machadish that it actually had pearls attached to it, which is a big chiddush. Because he says that's why when we say yikarehi mipninim, that the Torah is more precious than pearls. So that means if we're saying that the crown of Torah has to be greater than the crown of kahuna, that would imply that the crown of kahuna was decorated with pearls, and yet the Torah outranks that. You also have the drasha that the Gemara says in a couple of places that it also means yikarehi mikoyin gadol shenichnas lefnai v'lefnim, that the Torah, that pninim also refers to the kohen gadol who goes lefnai v'lefnim into the kodesh hakodashim, and Torah outranks him. Then Marshall says, now you also have in Pirkei Avos over there, you have the Keser Shemtov Oyla Gabeim. That is the Yiras Hashem that a person has to have to be Zoyche in any one of these crowns. Thus, the Gemara continues over here, Rabbi Yochanan Rami. So Rabbi Yochanan pointed out a contradiction in the way the word is written versus it's read. Ksiv Zor, Vikodin, and Zer. By each one of these three crowns, of these three Kalim, the Torah calls it a Zer. And it's pronounced like that, Zer, with a Tsere under the Yud, under the Zayin. Now, usually, many times when there's a yud, there will actually be a letter. Usually, many times when there's a tsere, there will actually be a letter yud over there. So here, we read it as though there was a yud there. We read it zer, but it's written in the Torah Zayin Reish, which is possible to read as zor. So what does it mean? Zocha nasis loy zer. If the person is zoicha, then whichever one of these three crowns he has, or multiple of them, becomes a crown for him. Loy zocha nasis loy zora hemena. If he's not zoicha, then it becomes foreign to him. Rashi explains, particularly, we mean as far as Torah. That if he's zoicha to learn Torah Lishma and to keep it, then it becomes a crown for him. And if not, then it becomes zara, it becomes foreign to him, and he forgets it. Marsha adds the same thing as far as kahuna and malchus. People are able to forfeit the keser kahuna, and people are able to forfeit the keser malchus. You have koyanim who didn't keep their yuchsin, as it describes in Sefer Ezra, and via goyalu mina kahuna, they were rejected from the kahuna. You have in Yechezkel, he mentions there were koyanim who served Avodah Zarah during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, and they're not going to be able to serve in the Beis Hamikdash Lasid Lavoi as regular koyanim. They're going to be like Bali Mumin. So a person is able to lose the keser kahuna by not being zoicha. Similarly, a person can lose the keser malchus, as we find that Shlomo's kingship, that Shlomo's kingdom was divided in two. When it comes to Torah, what it means is, besides that for Zorah, besides that Rashi is saying that he's going to forget it, Marsha points out the word Zorah, we also find, means a sword, like V'hoyo lachem l'Zorah, by the Slav, in Parshas Ba'alos, Rashi brings over there that there's some language, Greek, I think, where Zorah means a sword. So therefore, so it means it becomes a sword for him, it becomes Samamavas to him, as the Gemara goes on to discuss soon. Okay. A couple of more things about the Oren. Rabbi Yechanan Rami, k'siv v'asisa l'cha aroin eitz. One pasuk says that Hashem says to Moshe, make for yourself an Oren of wood. Uchtiv v'asu aroin atzei shittim. But then elsewhere says, they should make an Oren of atzei shittim. Now, in the simple sense, you could say that these are two different Aronis, the famous two Aronis, one that held the Luchas Rishonis and one that held the Luchas Shnias. And in fact, Tosfos says as much. Marshal refers to it over here. Tosfos says as much in Chulin. Nevertheless, the Gemara is assuming, for purposes of the drasha, that whatever applies to one Oren applies to the other one. So therefore, mikan the tamid chacham shebnei idim mitzuvim lasis lemelachdo. From here, we learn that a tamid chacham, the people of his city, have to do his work for him. Because first Hashem is putting it on Moshe, and then he's saying that no, the Jewish people will do it for you. We learned this at the beginning of the Masechta as well, where we had drasha along those lines as well. Next, about the Oren, it says mibayis mechutz tapen, who played it on the inside and on the outside. Amar Rava, so from here we learn, kol tamid chacham shein teichid kavara, ain't a tamid chacham. Any tamid chacham who's inside is not like his outside, so he's a hypocrite. He puts on a good show on the outside, but inside he's a no good nick, ain't a tamid chacham, then he's not a valid tamid chacham. Abayavi, tamid Rava, Rava ba'ulam, af nikra te'eva. Not only such a person is not a tamid chacham, such a person is called disgusting. Shenema be'iyov, as you find a pasuk in Iyov, it's actually one of the things where Eliphaz is telling him in one of his speeches. He said, "Now the previous pasuk says Hein b'kedosh of lo yamin, Hashem doesn't even consider his holy ones to be so faithful, because even the holy ones, whether it's malachim or tzaddikim, sometimes trip up." Now he continues, "Af ki, how much more so nisa benelach is disgusting and loathsome." Ish shoysa kamayim avla, a person who drinks injustice like water. So we're doushing water means Torah, ein mayim ala Torah, and he's drinking the water of Torah, and yet he has avla. So Hashem considers him to be a disgusting person, and even hein b'kedoshim, even the kedoshim, then Hashem says don't always live up to what they're supposed to. How much more so such a person? So then the Gemara is going to continue with more about the importance of learning Torah together with Yiras Shemayim, but that will leave for tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Vav Tevis. In Golos, we're compared to people who go on a sea voyage or go in the desert or any of the four people that are mentioned in Kapitel Kuf Zayin, Yodel Hashem Chasta, enough to bring a Korban Torah. Because we're in the sea, we're in the Maim Rabim of troubles of Parnassa, we're in the Midbar where there's snakes and scorpions and no water, representing the ruchniistic desolation of Golos. We're in jail because we're jailed in Golos. And we're sick because it arouses by us a love sickness, Cholas Abba, to Hashem. So now, when Mashiach Tzidkenu comes, then we'll thank Hashem that He took us out of all four of these situations. Halacha. So now, Shabbos afternoon after Chazar Hashatz, we say Tzidkos Chatzedek, three psukim, and that's like a tziduk adin for three tzaddikim who passed away Shabbos afternoon: Yosef, Moshe Rabbeinu, and David. That's why we have three psukim. If it's a day when we wouldn't say Tachanun as a weekday, then we don't say it when it comes out on Shabbos. However, if they are davening in a base of oval on Shabbos, usually you don't, because after all, on Shabbos, usually the oval comes to shul. But if for whatever reason you're davening in a base of oval on Shabbos, you would say it, because otherwise it's Pehesia and Ein Avelus for Pehesia b'Shabbos.
What
So we're saying that normally you don't say Tzidkoscha when you wouldn't say Tachanun were it a weekday. But you also don't want to do Avelos for Pehesia. So if you happen to be davening in an Oval's house on Shabbos, you would say it even though otherwise you wouldn't say it over there. Meaning, in other words, Bepashtus, what we mean is if it was a day when you're anyway not going to be saying it, say, for example, it was during Nissan or it was your Tes Kislev or whatever, then you tackle wouldn't say it even a Beis Oval. But if it's a regular Shabbos, when you would be saying it in Shul, and you would think, I shouldn't say it in a Beis Oval because we don't say Tachnin in a Beis Oval, don't do that because that would be Avelos for Pehesia and you can't do that on Shabbos.
People do it, there's one
avol,
and they had to say the
Torah,
so they
have three kriyas. Yeah. So maybe sometimes they do takadav in their Shabbos in order to have the three kriyas. Yeah, it could be.